51, 52. The dead will be raised in a twinkling of an eye at the last trump. We hear the expression, the last trump, we've got no problem. We think of the seven trumpets of Revelation, the last trumpet. Paul is writing this before Revelation is out. So the book is not rare. Paul evidently did not refer to that unless he had seen it in his vision of the third heaven. But if he had, he's still writing a mystery to his readers. So something his readers must have understood. The only series of trumpets we know of is the series Jim mentions. So I think it does connect the last trumpet as being an understandable symbol, probably from the Jericho trumpets, and connecting with the Revelation trumpets.
That raises a problem that how did Paul get his message when he lived before John the Revelator?
That's why I think Paul is not referring to the seven trumpets of Revelation. Paul is referring to the seven trumpets of Jericho, which happens to be the same picture.
Yeah.
The concurrence.
If he was the messenger, it would seem as though he would need the information from Revelation, though.
Well, that's the if.
Well, if he was Peter, he would still need it, too. And they both died before the Revelation was given. So, anyway, I just throwing a little dust in the air here. Yes, Brother Jeff.
Adding to that, too, I think Paul suggested that Thessalonians might be the first writing after Matthew. In Thessalonians 4:15, we have four events suggested, the shout and the voice of the archangel, the trump of God, and the resurrection. This is exactly corresponding to the things we have on the last day of Jericho, except in reverse order. And Paul confirms that it's reverse order when he says, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Now, why does he reverse the order? Well, his subject is the resurrection of the dead, which is why he goes back to the reference, and they rose early on the seventh day. So already when he's writing Thessalonians, he's well aware of Jericho as a type of the fall of Babylon.
Gene, yeah. Going back to your main question now. Yes, I do think they're the same seven angels that are sounding them. In Numbers, the 10th chapter, we have the law of trumpets. And there are basically four ways you knew what was happening by the trumpets. If you heard a single short blast, that meant all the elders come to the gate. There's a big discussion among the elders. If you heard two short blasts, then when all the people come. If you heard one long blast, that meant there's problems, there's a war, it's an alarm trumpet. And then there was the two, I was wrong on the first one. It's one short blast by one trumpet, one short blast by two trumpets. Two trumpets was the one that told them was all the people. One trumpet was the leaders only. Then the long blast was the alarm. Here the word sounded comes a word signifying a long sound. So it shows it's a trumpet of alarm. And that fits in exactly with the actions that follow. These are alarm actions.
What's the question?
The question is, do you believe the seven angels here in these trumpets are the same angels of the seven churches?
Yes, I do believe that. They're the same ones because the trumpet is used to announce something to a community, and as in the case of the Old Testament, as Carl brought out, to alert to different messages. There were messages being. So these seven trumpets refer to the seven messengers who blew their trumpet at each period. Now, I'm not going to go over it because it's in your pass-out, but at least you get my point of view. I guess I was the only one who put their point of view on this. The other panelists wanted to play it safe. But you see my view there. Just to comment on the first one, when Paul, who was the first messenger, blew his trumpet, he was saying that the gospel is now open to the Jew and the Gentile. That's a very profound and very significant announcement. Because before, the truth was only for the Jews. And then you can go right down, and you can see each messenger had this announcement. And in the last one, the Laodicea period, which would be Brother Russell, the papal system is no longer God's mouthpiece. That would be his, and come out of her, my people.
Gene?
Yes, Brother Carl?
Another comment ties into the alarm thought. We notice each of the trumpets have a calamity associated with it. Something is happening, a real disastrous action. And it happens upon the same elements in the same succession as the plagues later. But the timing is different. Here it's during the age, and the other seems to be at the end of the age. But it does suggest that there is a relationship that's early being established between what we're seeing in the trumpets and what we're going to see later in the plagues.
I guess we're all agreed on this one, so we'll go to the next item. In the first four and the six trumpets, we see one-third parts being affected. You know, as a trumpet blew, a third of this and a third of that was affected. We can't get into the details, but this was the record of Revelation. Does this refer to the right-hearted elements being converted to Christianity, or what would be the thought of the panelists of the third part that are affected?
I'll pass that one.
I can give my answer in three words. I don't know.
All right.
Well, as I said earlier, I don't think that third means exactly 33 and the third. I think the Lord is just trying to tell us that less than half, when it says one-third of the sun is darkened, I think he's referring to the gospel is reduced. More than 50% of the movement was lost. I think that's what he's trying to say. And one-third of the moon was darkened. That means one-third, less than 50% of the law was ineffective. And then when he said one-third of the stars were darkened, that is the effects of the apostles and the missionaries and so forth. So it refers to the reduction or the increase, as in the fourth stage, the Thyatira stage, the dark stage. And that's understandable if you look at secular history. The worst period in the history of the human race was what the secular historians call the Dark Ages. And that was a period from 799 to 1517. And that's what happened. The gospel message was really reduced considerably. And I think that's the message that the Revel is trying to tell us.
Thank you. Well, it would be my thought that the third part here represent the right-hearted part that were being converted to Christianity. Just like in Zechariah, I'll bring the third part through the fire. It was the right-hearted class that would be brought through it. However, we won't spend any time on that.
Well, Gene, can I ask you a question on your answer? There's something that a little problem with me, maybe you can answer real quickly. The third part here seems to be the part that's hurt.
Yeah.
And so why would the right part be the hurt part?
Because the third part of the grass are scorched, they're changed from their condition. They're brought to a condition of conversion. That would be my thought. That the changes take place here. I can't go any further than that. Our time is I'm running way behind here. All right. We got the last three woes in Revelation 8:13. Woe, woe, woe. And this is where our brethren here in Jersey City want us to get into the main thrust of what we're after here, the last three woes. Please explain. Yes, Brother Jim.
We go back to the end of Ezekiel, the second chapter, and verse 10.
I'm sorry.
Ezekiel chapter 2, verse 10. We've got the book, and it says, "And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without." Sounds a lot like the seven seals there, doesn't it? Scroll. "And there were written therein," this is on the inside, "three things: lamentation, mourning, and woe." Well, now, as I try to line them up, the first one appears to me a lamentation. The second, mourning. The third, a mourning. The fourth, a lamentation again, which leaves for 5, 6, and 7, 3 woes. And this would correspond to the period of the Reformation, followed by the period of Protestant expansion, followed by the harvest.
Thank you. Brother Carl?
Similar, but a little different phraseology. I see basically the same concept, I think, that Jim sees there. The woes, I think, have to do with trumpet blasts, which are include messages taught. I don't consider them all to be clean messages. The message that comes out during the fifth trumpet is the locust. And we got the locust a lot later after in the harvest. We got Joel's locust and all of these. I think they're related. I think these are the wave of humanism that started spreading after the Protestant Reformation. There was and this undermined the authority greatly of the church. The concepts of humanism, rationalism that came out. In the sixth one, you've got a message regarding revolutionary. It's connected with the sixth plague later of the Euphrates and the loosing of these winds that are held. We talked about in Revelation 7 chapter. So I think it is the development of the revolutionary thought by the doctrine of the rights of man. As the rights of man. The seventh, I think, is the harvest message. And the harvest message lays its groundwork. And all of these are undermining, preparing the way for the seven last plagues. I think they are connected 3 to 7 as the first 3 plagues were to the 7 last in Egypt.
Well, the word woe means time of trouble. Or the word woe means a grievous distress on the nominal church, not the true church. So when we speak of a woe trumpet sounding, it means a distress is going to come upon the nominal church. So I see the 3 woe trumpets as part of a 3-stage breakdown of the Reformation. I don't quite do it as Jim does it. There's some similarity. But I break down the Reformation into 3 phases. Early Reformation, later Reformation, and final Reformation. We are still in the Reformation period, but it's a final Reformation. It didn't end. There's still reformers going on. So the first woe trumpet, that is grievous distress on the nominal system, was in Sardis. And there, the big distress was, a door was identified. A door is open, a door is seen. And that's where I put America. Because America, even though it was established in 1776, the Puritans came much earlier, 1620. And there were even people before that that went to the Virginia colonies. So a door is identified. And then the second woe trumpet, which is the Philadelphia period, that's the later Reformation, the door is opened up. And we could see that between 1725 and 1874. Tremendous immigration, people going over to America to settle in. And we think that also was the period in which the preparation was made for the truth to take root in the new land. And then the final Reformation was the Laodicean period and the third woe trumpet, and that is to come out of her, my people. So there, I see the door connected with the woe trumpet. The first is there's a door. The second, the door is opened up. The third is come out of her. And to, and of course, tied in with that is the tremendous Protestant movements. I said earlier about the fifth stage, the locusts, when it talks about the locusts and the scorpions. If you take a locust and put it under a microscope, you will see the shape of a head of a horse. And so what does that mean? I see that, for example, the brethren in the United States, as well as Europe, the reformers in Europe, They were printing these tracts. The tracts, to me, were the locusts. See, they were sent, the tracts were sent, and there was a woe to the nominal system, because the nominal system now was being broken down.
Well, we got to go on to the plates. We just can't get involved anymore in the trumpets. But we got to get to the plagues and the vials, or really literally bowls. That's a poor translation, vials. It should be translated bowls. In Revelation 15:6, what or who are the seven angels with or having the seven plagues? Did these angels have the plagues, or were they given them? Carl, you're in deep meditation there.
I'll pass. Good question. I don't have a good answer.
I can answer related questions, but I'm not sure I'm too good on this one.
Well, you want to give it a whirl?
Okay. Well, can I sort of give a little flavor to the 15th and 16th chapters? That I think I'm prepared to do.
Well, if you do it in 10 words
okay.
or less.
I'll pass.
Could you ask the question again, brother?
Who are the seven angels with or having the seven plagues?
Okay. I think they're all connected. The angels, the plagues, and the bowls. The plagues refer to God's condemnation. It will be, the plagues represent an affliction that the Lord God is going to give because of his divine displeasure. In other areas, it's called the wrath of God. So the plagues represent some. It literally is, the plagues are messages of truth. I don't see this as a physical thing, you know. Plagues are going to be an infection on the body and things like that. But the plagues are messages of truth that have an adverse effect on nominal Christendom. So therefore, the angels are not literal angels. They would represent kind of an allegorical representation of these seven messengers that would plague nominal systems. The bowls are the format, just like any bowl. You know, a bowl is just a format. It's a vehicle by which the messages are delivered. So it would seem reasonable to me, that the plagues are messages of truth. The angels are the subject matter of the truth that will be presented and have an adverse effect. And the bowls represent the format. Now, I'd like to even go further and suggest what the bowls are. The bowls are the volumes. The volumes that were written by the seven messenger. Because going with what Jim said, if you remember, there were seven plagues throughout the gospel age. But those plagues were to release the hold that the nominal system had on the elect class. It was not to destroy Babylon. But only in the seventh stage, where there are seven, where in Jericho they went seven times around, did the walls fall down. So I see the 16th chapter of Revelation telling us that the plagues were to release the whole, but the 18th chapter is where Babylon is destroyed. So, again, the bowls represent the format, which I put as books. The plagues are the way the Lord is going to create an adverse effect on the nominal system. And incidentally, historically, I remember reading somewhere where Brother Russell, when he wrote the fourth volume, he sent a free copy of the fourth volume to every minister in the United States. Now, that says a lot, doesn't it? the fourth volume, if you're familiar with the fourth volume, you could see that they would be terribly upset by it. But they were informed about it, and that was the adverse effect.
All right. Well, a short comment. Very
okay. Short. Just based upon Paul's remarks, I have no big problem with these seven angels here being the same seven angels we were talking about all along because of the close relationship between the trumpets and the plagues. That in the one case, the problems occurred during the age, and now there is vengeance for those problems at the end of the age by the seven angels that saw those problems and being their messengers. I do have a problem with saying the vials as being books. I think the vials are a method of delivery of the wrath, and I think the plagues are political, sociological events.
Yes. Well, it would seem to me that the record is clear. These seven angels have the seven last plagues. They're not yep. given them. They contain them. They contain these seven last plagues, but there was something they needed yet before they could be delivered. All right.
Oh, excuse me, but in the seventh verse it does say that one of the four living creatures or attributes gives it to them.
Yes, they are given the bowls.
Presumably by justice.
Yeah, by
the bowls
justice.
Or the plagues?
The seven bowls, yeah.
Jim, what does yours read? Did they give them the plagues
bowls.
Or the bowls?
Bowls.
The bowls only, yeah. That's what I thought.
Okay. All right, now, these bowls are poured out after the temple is filled with smoke from the glory of God. What's your thought? Yes, Brother Jim.
I think there's a reference here back to the Temple of Solomon in 1 Kings chapters 6 and 8, the end of the 6th chapter, the beginning of the 8th. The temple was dedicated on the 7th month, but it was not completed until the 8th month. What does that mean? Ye are the temple of the living God. The temple is dedicated before it is completed. It's suggesting to us then that the resurrection of the sleeping saints takes place before the church is complete. On the day of dedication, smoke filled the temple so that the priests could not stand to minister. In Revelation 15:8, smoke fills the temple. In the fifth verse, the temple has been opened or dedicated, corresponding to the resurrection of the sleeping saints. But smoke fills the temple now so that the people cannot come to the temple to receive the blessings. Because the resurrection of the sleeping saints alone is not sufficient to bring into operation the ministration of the priesthood for the new covenant blessings of the people. Not until we get to the last plague, and it says, it is done. Like our Lord's words on the cross, it is finished. Then the church is complete. Then the priesthood will be able to minister the new covenant blessings as the people come to them for the blessings of the new covenant age.
All right, Brother Carl.
Just adding to that, the same picture is carried through in the tabernacle, Exodus 40, verses 34 and 35, and in Ezekiel's temple, chapters 43 and 44.
In Ezekiel's temple, it's twice. Once it's filled with smoke when they go in through the east gate and come out, and then they go around to the north gate, and it's twice dedicated.
I did not know the second one.
I agree with that.
And the tabernacle and Solomon's temple, Ezekiel's temple, and here. All right. Now, we have to, just got a few minutes left here. I don't know where the time went, but in Revelation 13:14, the image of the beast says, you must get our mark. They speak, they slay, they mark, they prohibit from buying and selling. In Revelation 14:9-10, God says, you must not. Anyone that gets the mark of the beast or its image gets the plagues that are poured out without mixture. And he shall drink of God's wrath, and so on. And in Revelation 15:2, we see those who had conquered the beast in his image, standing on a sea of glass with harps. And so, well, how do you understand the sequences here of this? Anyway.
Well, I might as well speak up. I'm the heretic on this one. I understand of chapters 12, 13, and 14 that they go together. The chapter 12 tells us about the true church until the second advent. The 13th chapter tells us about the false church-state system until the second advent. And the 14th chapter looks at the second advent. Therefore, the portions in chapter 13 I put before our Lord's return. That's the heretical part. And so in chapter 15, we're talking of things up through the dedication of the temple, or dedication of the church, the resurrection of the sleeping saints. And after that, then, we have the rest of the harvest divided into seven periods of time. I would suggest that if we look at the seven last plagues in Exodus, it gives us the major world events. If we look at Revelation, we're shown what the major world events are intended to do towards the destruction of Babylon. And to that event, or towards that end, we have seen things like the call, "Come out of her, my people," followed by World War I, followed by depression, followed by World War II, followed by an East versus West conflict that resulted in the Soviet disunion. And I think we would have then a couple of more events to go to complete the church and finish the present evil world. How did I do?
Good, thank you. Brother Carl.
Great. Well, sometimes this fact is taken as an indication that the mark has to be received before the plagues can begin. And I'd like to just address that section of the answer. In Revelation, the 20th chapter, verse 4, we have a very similar expression. "And I saw thrones, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither received his mark upon their forehead," same language, "or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Well, then we'd have to say that all of the 144,000 had to be of those during the period of the mark. Well, that's not true, of course. Of the mark, some of them come under that. He's giving a characteristic that includes those who would not receive the mark, includes those before. I think the same thing is the word, is the fact in Revelation 16, 2 and 3. That he's giving a qualification. The plagues, as I understand, cover long periods of time. And he's saying, this is the attitude. These are the ones who, when the mark is there, will not receive the mark. These are the ones who are faithful now and will remain faithful. That's covering a large period, just like in Revelation 20.
Well, Revelation 20, of course, I think that Jesus is calling extravagant attention to the church class, and he says none of these have received the mark. That's the important thing, that there isn't one in this body that got the mark of the beast. If you got the mark of the beast, you wouldn't be there.
But if
you wouldn't be a part of the bride class at all.
We apply the same consistency, though.
Yeah.
The 16:2 into Revelation 24, and we say 16:2 shows that the plagues cannot begin until the mark's available. Then we got to say the rain cannot begin until the mark's available, because these did not get the mark either. These are free. So the consistency argument is the argument I'm using.
Well, okay. Well, we got to press on here. Did you have a quick comment?
I think I can make this one reasonably quick. I think the chief stress there in the mark is to show that there are two marks. There's the mark of the Lord, and there's the mark of the beast. The mark of the Lord is to be only on the forehead. We have to be in mental and heart harmony with it. Whereas the mark of the beast is acceptable to Satan either in the forehead or in the right hand. Sure, he'd like you to be in full sympathy with it, but he's willing to accept it if you just go along with it.
Very good. All right. Well, we just got about a minute. I'm trying to figure out what to to do with this last minute. Well, we can't do that either. Well,
you can go to the ninth.
You have a half an hour on that.
Well, questions now. The second, the last half hour is going to be questions. Do you believe that the plagues have been poured out, or are they future? Brother Carl.
Yes. I think that I believe we're in the middle of the plague. Therefore, they have started in their future. I'm guided by Revelation 18, which implies that those who got the message to come out of Babylon, if they did not come out, would receive the plagues. Therefore, it must be available. Plagues must be available to those who were living at the time that message went forth. On the other hand, and based on the woes, that the third woe has to precede the seven last plagues. Therefore, if the third woe is the harvest message, it must come after, some period after. I would start the plagues in 1914. But the 1874 to 14 is the message of the third woe, and the plagues begin in 14.
All right, but the 18th chapter says, so shall her plagues come in a single day, in a single year.
Are those the same plagues? If I can carry on there, in the 18th chapter, it describes what those plagues are that he's speaking there, and those plagues are given in verse 8. Therefore, shall her plagues come in one day, not the seven last, but three, death, mourning, and famine. He's not talking the same plagues in this verse.
Yeah, and she'll be burned with fire.
Burned with fire. Though it's not the seven, it's not the plagues.
But after that, when she's burned with fire, you can't plague her anymore.
Oh, that's why I think the plagues are going on now.
Anyway, our time is really up. We're being... we'll give each of you a chance to say whether you think they're past or future, because Carl has had his only comment. Brother Jim.
Okay, I'll suggest that the first plague was calling the Lord's people out of Babylon. The second was World War II. The third was the Depression. The fourth was World War I. Third, the Depression. Fourth was World War II. The fifth was the East versus West conflict that seems to be just about ending. The sixth is... And the seventh will be the final overthrow of the present evil world, which commonly we call Armageddon.
Brother Paul.
I have a different system of thinking here. The first plague would be poured upon the earth. This represents the stable religious institutions that was built up over the gospel period and the traditions that still hold the people.
And on those that worship the beast in the image.
Yes.
The first thing is...
That's right. And then the second one would be the one that was poured on the sea. That would be on the irreligious masses of mankind. And then the third one would be poured on the rivers and the fountains of water. These were rivers that were supplying the nominal system. And you'll notice that there was a stench not fit to drink from these waters. The fourth one would be poured on the sun. This was the sun of their gospel, not the original gospel, which scorched the men with fire. And the fifth would be poured on the seat of the beast, which is the seat of the papacy. This is where the errors and the lies are held together. And the sixth would be poured on the Euphrates. Euphrates is a symbol of Babylon or Christendom. And the seventh would be poured on the air. On the air would be the ecclesiastical heavens, where Satan and his organization is located.
All right, we'll conclude with that. I only say that I believe the plagues are future. So I'm outnumbered and outgunned here, but I'm going to go down fighting. All right, we'll open it to your questions now. Yes, Brother George, and
well, I'd like to say I agree with you.
Oh, thank you. That's the best news I've heard all day.
In Revelation 15, we have to accept the Lord's word as written. And it says, I saw in the first verse, it says, another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, clouds, bowls, whatever you want to call them. And then we come down to verse 7. And the seven angels came out of the temple, having these bowls of plagues. What are they clothed in? Pure and white linen. They have golden girdles. This is a glorified church. That's what I ask. Would you accept the fact that I live like you do, that this has to be a completed church? Amen.
All right, we'll let the panel members answer that. Yeah, Brother Jeff.
I'll suggest that since the reference to the temple being opened in the 15th chapter is representative of the resurrection of the sleeping saints, that then we have angels who can come out of the temple at that time. They need not as yet be glorified, not until the bride is complete, which we have only with the last plague when it is said, "It is done," like our Lord's words on the cross, "It is finished."
Brother Carl?
It's the seven angels who are clothed in the white linen, not all the church, but the messengers to the church. Again, one of the reasons why I think it has to be after the death of the seventh messenger. That is when he too is glorified. The other six are already glorified and can begin by those angels who are glorified.
Well, it would seem to me that the seven angels that come out of the temple after it's filled with smoke of the glory of God and dedicated would not be the resurrection of the sleeping saints, but would be when the church is sealed, when no man can enter it, when no man can go into it to receive its blessings. Only the messengers come out and they deliver the wrath of God poured out without mixture. So I would put that as a future event, but in a token form, I can see how the truth movement has had plague-producing ingredients in it throughout the harvest, but it's always been mixed with the blessings of restitution and the kingdom and the truth about hell and all of this. We've never had a full-strength poison hemlock that they have to drink. It's unmixed. Full of God's wrath, that's all. No more, no less. They've got to drink it. And if they say, "We don't want to drink it," Jeremiah says, "You've got to drink it. You don't have a choice. You've got to drink it." Yeah, Brother Carl.
Well, I'm glad you used the illustration of Jeremiah. I think that's a perfect illustration to use. Jeremiah was told that he was going to tear down the nations. The Lord told him that. The nations that he mentions giving the cup to and tearing down, some of them didn't have death. He was dead. Sometime after he was dead, his prophecy that they would be torn down was taken for the deed. I think the prophecy during their lifetime of these angels, during the period, what they saw happening, they said, "This will not last. God's kingdom will come. The system will be torn down." The fact that it's torn down shows the accuracy of their prophecy. They're given credit.
All right. We'll have to go to the next question. Yes, Brother Williams.
This question is for Brother Paul. In his early dissertation, he mentioned he had some problems about the seven messengers. The question, I suppose the first question, and based on his answer, I suppose the second one is the following. The question is, do you believe or do you think it's conceivable that any individual could have made the calling election show with any error?
It all depends on how you it all depends on how you define error.
Do
you mean
doctrines?
Okay, doctrines. Well, I would say no. They would not make their call and election sure if they were not in harmony with the fundamental doctrines of the early church. Now, the early church was the redemption, the idea of the redemption, and the idea of Jesus being the Redeemer, and that there would be another opportunity for life, believing on Jesus. Those fundamentals, if they believe that, they could certainly make their call and election sure. But hellfire and immortality of soul and no redemption, you know, you're predestined. I don't believe they made their call and election sure.
Yes. I do have a question focusing on comments that Brother Bond made regarding the appearance of numbers of scripture. Now, I agree with what you bring up.
but to also focus on the context to which we have referred for meaning of commercial communication. Now, as Vince states, if the fraction is on less than one third, say one third, it should be used not to live through, but referring to content less than one third, less than 1%. And similarly, if the fraction more than one third run across, say, like two thirds, it should be used as a content, not to live through. What is the content more than one third? Now, you're also.
You said that very eloquently, brother. Well, that's why it's eloquent.
Now, you also mentioned the parable in Matthew 25, the five wise virgins.
Yes.
Let me ask you to comment on the point why the two converts of the original students and the church is less consistent in time. Yes, there's a lot of communication.
Okay, I think the Lord was trying to tell us in that parable that don't concentrate on numbers. Now, an interpretation I can give on five and five could be pretty much like the selection of the goats, if you remember, in the tabernacle. It was kind of a lottery, you know. Equal, the goats had equal chance to be selected. And I think the five and five means there's an equal chance to being in the great company class or being in the elect class. There's no preferences or priorities. The Lord is impartial about who's in each class. I think that's the idea of the five and five, but five and five does not mean quantity in terms of the church class and the great company class. Yeah, I think that's what the thought would be.
All right. Anyone wish to comment here? Or?
Well, just again, that there is a exact ratio there also. You got two groups. It's exactly half. One group is great company, one group is little flock. The size of the group is immaterial. It's two groups half. The two goats, there were just two goats, equal number, because you're looking at one half of the group. One goat here, one goat there. One class. Half of two is one.
All right. Another question. Brother Glenn, and then over here.
Regarding the slaves, whether or not they started or began, in Revelation 18, where it talks about the plague in the Telephon Battle, the question in the plague. I'd like to hear some explanation about that, particularly from Brother Gene, as to how you understand that. We've seen the plague on Battle as being having already started and being separate from the seventh plague, which is how the last plague, or do you see that as being people?
I see the seven last plagues as being future, after the temple is filled with smoke from the glory of God. And these plagues come from the dedicated temple. They don't come from a mix of the great company and the little flock and the general body of Bible students, which would compose, mostly wheat, but maybe some tares and maybe even some Second Death class would be among us. We are not the, we're only probationary members of that temple until the sealing work is completed. And after that point, then from this temple comes the seven angels, and each one pours out his bowl, and when all of these bowls are poured out, it fills up the wrath of God, which he promised would be poured out without mixture. Brother Jim.
I kind of thought we were in the day of wrath, but nevertheless, as I view it, the call, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins and that you receive not of her plagues, went out well more than 100 years ago, And in my mind, at that time, the youngest consecrated individual must surely be dead by today. And if so, is that not an idle threat?
Well, Brother Carl.
Well, I just want to repeat one point that maybe had been missed earlier. These plagues are poured out by the seven angels. I thought we had pretty much agreed the seven angels were probably the same as the seven angels of the churches and throughout of the seals. And
Well, we didn't agree on that.
Oh, okay. Then I see the point. Okay. Then I'll just take my perspective only. Seeing them as the seven angels, I have never claimed to be one of the seven angels. Therefore, I feel no part of doing the pouring myself. I'm content to let the angel do the pouring and be an observer.
I don't want to continue the discussion among the panel here, but I will briefly say that I believe that the seven angels that have the seven last plagues are the harvest message. They contain them. Everything that's needed to sum up God's wrath is all in there, and it's mixed with a lot of other things. But what they don't have is the bowl. And that is divinely provided. Some brethren ask, well, how could the church ever deliver such a message? That's not our problem. The Lord says He provides the bowl. You don't have to raise your eyebrows because that's His problem. He's got to provide the bowls to pour out the message. And the bowl is a flat bowl. It's like an old dishpan, where they used to take the dishwater and take it out the door and throw it out. And each bowl is designated to fall on a certain group of people. And each bowl contains 1/7, essentially, of God's wrath dedicated to each group. So that's my understanding of it. Now, the fact that that people live and die before they experience the wrath of God, that doesn't trouble me at all, because I feel that's a general statement of fact. He says, come out of her, Babylon has fallen from favor. If you don't, you'll get the plagues. But the plagues don't take place clearly until the temple is filled with the glory of God. No man could enter it to receive its blessings. No man could enter in to minister from it. Only the seven angels come out of the temple with these plagues. They have the plagues, they are given the bowls, and then they deliver it. And that seems to me by a sealed class of saints. It's not a general harvest work.
Do you have any suggestions what those bowls might be, Brother Gene? Any ideas, you know?
No, conjecture? I don't know what the bowl would be. I think that's divinely provided. The Lord will have to work out some means of allowing the church to come to a certain point where their message will be heard before the world. And then they will execute the judgments written. This honor have all the saints.
Would they be people?
The bowls?
Yeah.
No. It's
would they be books? Would they be writings?
The writings are in the plagues. The writings contain the plagues.
Okay.
But how do you get the writings of Brother Russell delivered to the world?
Okay, you're talking about the method then.
Yeah.
The method of delivering.
The method of
the
delivering.
Message.
You've got to have. You've got the plague-producing ingredients and the harvest message in the scriptures too. How do you get this in an effective form which has the full wrath of God right in it, that sums up all of His indignation? How do you deliver that to these different groups and make them feel the weight and pain of this message? You know, they're destroyed with the sword of His mouth. It's sure there's a lot of elements working in the world that are creating trouble, but it's the sword of His mouth, the very word of the Lord, that inflicts the damage here that is so painful to them. All right. Any other questions? We had Alan here first, and then Brother Tony.
In Revelation 1:18, our resurrected Lord indicates that He has the key to hell and death. In Revelation 20, church. I'd like the panel's thoughts as to what that key might be and whether it has any connection to slaves and understanding of Jesus.
Anyone?
Well, I don't have a great thought, but in the my understanding, let's see, that was chapter 9, verse 5, was it?
9, 9, verse 1.
9, verse 1, that's right. There are two times when we see a star falling from heaven. And the first one is a few verses earlier in chapter 8, verse 10. I would understand this to be at the beginning of the third period of the church when the heathen Rome fell from the public favor. And chapter 9, verse 1, I would understand is the beginning of the fifth period of the church when at the Reformation the papal Rome fell from the public favor. That would be my best understanding.
I've often, I'm not going to make much comments on it other than the key. He wants to know what the key is. The key has always been a kind of a door of opportunity, something that could open up the door, something, some device that can get beyond a present situation. And I think the Lord used the messengers, or we could think of the messengers as the key during these periods.
Okay, now, let's just try to frame my words earlier. I don't have a lot of thought regarding the key of the bottomless pit. The bottomless pit is a larger concept than I usually see us delve into. The only one I've really seen delve into in great depth is Brother Will Hollister. He had quite a treatise on the bottomless pit, and that was probably the closest I've seen to a full definition. It's used not only at the end of the age, it's used during the age. It's got things in it to begin with that come out of it. It's got things to go into at the end later. So it's quite a large concept. It's judgment. Judgment is involved with it. And I think that's the authority or right to exercise judgment or release those elements that will exercise judgment. But I think it is very distinct from the keys of death and hell there in the first chapter. Keys of death and hell, I believe, have to do with the ransom and its merit and the ability to raise mankind, and do not relate to the same key as the key of the bottomless pit.
All right. Well, it was addressed to the panel, so I'll leave it there. Any, Brother Tony, you had a question.
In Revelation, the 16th chapter, it mentions the seven glasses upon which the vials of wrath are poured out upon them, and their reaction to these plagues upon them. And my question is, if it's already taken place, how could they, we haven't seen this reaction in regard to these plagues being poured upon them. So how could they be in the past? To my knowledge, I haven't read anything about their recognizing. In order to react to a plague, you have to recognize a plague is on you.
All right, Brother Carl.
Tony may not have seen it. I seem to see it. I've seen the reactions very much to the first four or five plagues. The first one was boils, a sore from within, dissension from within. I see they recognize inner dissension within their midst. They got problems with it. It's something that's caused them a great plague, and they don't know how to deal with it. And it's done a lot of tearing down. I'm following basically the early reprint comments on these plagues, which I accept basically. The second plague, where you got a polarization of the blood of a dead man.
Well, just one question on that, too. How do you tie in the fact that it's those that worship the beast in the image? When the beast in his image wasn't even activated.
Because I think it covers the entire end period, and it will include those who don't. Just like you said about those who reign, they did not receive the mark of the image either. Some of them lived way before the image. Some of the first advent, they hadn't received the mark of the image, wasn't even available, but they had not received it. The same thing here. These have not been of that type to receive the image. I tried to establish a consistency between Revelation 20 and 16 in the application of the image. Here, when you come to the effect of the second plague, polarization, that's one of the problems our society is facing today, the polarization of society. Left-wing and right-wing don't even talk. They've got a government that's closed down because they won't talk.
How does that affect the word of the Lord? The wrath of God poured out without mixing.
It affects the system very much. The system does not have stability to build on. It undermines the stability of the entire religious political system. I see that as one of the great undermining influences and a recognized influence. And certainly the third one, in the seminary system, I see them turning the Bible on right and left. They see it as nothing but blood. It just becomes blood to them. So I see that they recognize that effect, and the ones who want to go back to the Bible are having a hard time. They're feeling plagued. And in the fourth one, the exposés that are going by the sunlight of righteousness being shining upon the earth, I think that the exposés that are going on within Christendom, within the world in general, are tremendously plaguing. They can't do things in the dark anymore. And the one about the seat of the beast, the papal authority, they say no birth control, and people laugh. They go and get their birth control. They undermine the authority of the church, has been totally undermined. So I see that these are five effects that are very clearly seen. The loss of support, and the sixth one, of economic support, I see as being greatly drained off, and it's greatly plaguing. They're closing down schools, they're closing down hospitals. They don't have the funds they used to have. They don't have the moral support they used to have. So, yes, I see these effects as being very real with my eyes.
Just to add to that, because I think if we take the Catholic Church, say, 50 years ago, or even 60 years ago, and compare it to today, you see some vast changes. Now, why did they change? Because they're experiencing these problems, these difficulties. I can remember being a former Catholic as a young boy. I can remember the Good Friday. You remember not eating meat on Good Friday? And today the Catholics eat it every day. That was a big change. And then the saints were named. Remember, they had a whole list of saints. They threw them all out. And then the Pope's power. I think maybe, at least that's the way I view it, the Pope has lost his power. It's not the same. The power is now vested in the College of Cardinals. That's where the power shifted. So what does that mean? It means they have changed. If they have changed, they've been affected by something that's causing some serious problems within their system.
All right, thank you, Brother Bob. One last question. Oh, I'm sorry.
I do have a question,
okay. Well, you can ask it. I don't know if they'll have time to answer it. The chairman is here.
Revelation 17:1, we have reference to the one of the seven angels which have the seven vials. In Revelation 21:9, we have the same reference to one of the seven angels. So it should seem to give evidence that certainly it's one of the messengers who is that. And I would think maybe the panel agrees with that. But some things suggest to me that I'm wondering if the panel could comment on this, or maybe they can say a private with it. In Revelation 19, where it talks about the army on both sides of the veil, in the picture of the Elisha, the smiting of the Jordan by Elijah, in Psalm 149 suggesting the honor of all the saints execute the judgments written, those pictures all together. I wonder if you could harmonize the outpouring of all the seven last plagues and all this potential work might be pictured by the smiting of the Jordan by Elijah, or John the Baptist.
Well, for you brethren that are already involved in Revelation study, we hope that this was an addition of information to that study. For those that are not involved in the Revelation study, we trust that this will stimulate your appetites for one, because you can see how much knowledge these brethren over the years have accumulated in their studies. I mean, just imagine that, seeing these four members up here, and yet there are differences of opinion. And thereby, yet that should even stimulate us more to look into this wonderful book and to see what is, what beholds the future and where we are, where we now in the stream of time. So I really, I got a lot out of it, and I was blessed by it, and we really thank the panel members for their efforts. In some cases, like sticking out your neck, so to speak, you know, making statements that that don't coincide with someone else, it takes a little bit of bravery to form your own opinions. And this can only be done by study and by looking into yourself and also going by Thessalonians, prove all things for that which is good, by the statement by the Apostle Paul. Before we close with a hymn, there's still that, I was given that same message again, that blue four tempo. Now, it may not belong to any of us, but when I made the announcement, perhaps the member that whoever belongs to this car wasn't in this hall. It's a blue tempo, license plate EB544. The lights are on, and we certainly don't want to get the jumper cables out this early of the year, right? And outside of that, we'll ask for him from somebody from the floor to close. 58 was first. Sorry, brethren. 58. 258. are there many in there? We're running late. The first and the last, stand on the last, please. And then we'll ask Brother Gene to conclude with a word of prayer.